This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eita, hello, Dumelang. How you guys doing? Welcome to another edition of Hashtag Politics with Botsang Modimoame Moilwa. This is Wow, What a Week. Yo, what a week indeed.
Yeah, Brother Fesh, welcome back from your main job, your important job. And yeah, what a week worldwide, globally.
Yes, sir.
There's such a lot happening. And I think we have a packed show that we are going to be dishing out this weekend.
In fact, without wasting any time, let's start with Johannesburg. The mayor of Johannesburg has been making headlines for the wrong reasons. He still has the brand new mayor smell. And already there's people who are upset, but there are people who also see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
What is going on with Mayor Dada Morero?
As I was driving to the studio, I remember the song that I used to like after lockdown. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, I think they should have ushered Mayor Dada Morero into the chambers with that song. But you are saying he's still the fresh of a, in the smell of a fresh mayor, therefore he's allowed maybe to have errors or media.
No, I didn't even say he's allowed anything. I'm just saying he's new, but already there's talkability.
Yeah, no, but I think he started on the wrong foot.
Yeah.
And for a seasoned politician like that, he has been on politics for a very long time.
Sure.
You know, he has been an activist and all that. Some of the comments he would make at a policy meeting of the party that has deployed him, you know, it was hardly a week in office. I think they were unfortunate and they were not well calculated.
Okay, so for those that missed it, Mayor Dada Morero suggested that Johannesburg Metro Police hire foreigners.
Yes.
So that there's never a lost in translation situation.
Yeah.
Actually, in a nutshell.
In his words, he said some of the cases, they can't solve them because the criminals will communicate in a foreign language that the JMPD police are not understanding and in front of the police.
Sure.
So they manage it. I'll come back to that. What was he trying to do? And like I said, as you said, actually, there may be a good intention in that.
Mm.
But you must know the policies of your organization, because what he said and he uttered in an ANC meeting, it was against the ANC policy of creating jobs for local people. And so that's the first thing. The other thing is his comrade or one of the cabinet ministers who's a policy developer for the ANC, or chairing that policy development committee and development of people, Mamoloko Kubayi, Minister Kubayi, has talked about how political office bearers should be trained, they must go and study and develop, and working hand in hand with higher education and so forth. If the language proficiency is the concern of Mayor Dada Morero, then what he should be suggesting is that the city must invest on training upskilling them, or even recruiting officers domestically who are proficient in languages that they think they want to target. Let me use an example.
Sure.
One of the issues that City of Joburg has with illegal miners is Basotho, the Mozambicans, because they were people. Now you can't tell me that in the entire of Johannesburg, you don't find Portuguese and the Mozambican Shangaan speaking people that you can target and recruit. That's the first part. But I think it was an unfortunate situation because he has created a problem now where the residents of Soweto or of Johannesburg has marched to his office in the past week to hand over CVs. That was a nice one, not in protest only, but to say, no, so since you've got vacancies,
clearly you've got jobs.
You've got jobs.
Hire us.
Our CVs. And you see, you must also do a dipstick of before you utter issues. I can tell you there are many South Africans who are multilingual because people have, especially in Joburg, because we interact with people from foreign countries. Some of us have lived in neighboring countries.
Sure,
you understand?
Sure.
But if your target is to say, for example, you are targeting drug traffickers in Hillbro or Yeovil or wherever, and most of these drug traffickers are in inverted commas, let's say Nigerians and Congolese, then train your officers to be proficient in those languages. That's what is done internationally.
In fact, I think policing aside, in any profession, you upskill yourself according to the trends.
Exactly.
Even doctors will tell you. Doctors are going to conferences and seminars all the time because what is the latest in, for instance, heart treatment?
Because this is the world is moving. Technology
exactly.
is changing.
So you move your staff according to where the world is going.
Yeah, not to say, in the middle of all that, they've got a partner in the government of national unity in the form of Patriotic Alliance,
sure.
whose position is very clear about foreigners in South Africa, whether legal or illegal. But, you know, that's not a specialized skill to have foreigners. I'm a South African. I speak 9 South African languages fluently, read and write, and I speak 4 or 5 foreign languages as
sure.
well.
You sure.
But also, let me tell you, there was a discussion in some mainstream media to say what Dada is talking about. You know, us calling people with his nicknames. I don't even know his name. I'm sure the guy has a name. Mr. Morero.
Your worship, Morero.
yes. That his suggestion is well-practiced standard in the world.
Mm.
Understand? And I know where they come from when they were saying that, to say intelligent information, covert operations, having people to infiltrate syndicates of criminals. You sometimes go and recruit people from those nations or countries
them. And you plant them.
And you plant them in. But that's a very different, that's a completely different operation. First of all, JMPDs are not South African police services who will have a covert operation, intelligent operations, or undercover operation. They don't have that capacity. So that is the responsibility of SAPS according to the Act, or the South African National Defense Force, or recently the Border Management Authority forces. You know, but you can't have that operation by JMPD.
Sure.
They are not having the competency. It's not within their Act.
Sure.
To can do that kind of a job. So he overstepped. And you do have covert operation. You do have people that you plant into syndicates.
Yes.
It could be people from their own country, but it's a whole vetting process. It takes a lot to arrive at that.
And we will never know about it.
And we will never know about it. Yes. Mm. You see, for example, again, one of the boo-boos he did this week was he got 9 court orders to can raid buildings
sure.
that are, you know, being hijacked. They call them hijacked buildings around Johannesburg.
Yes.
Now, that happening, there goes Dada again in the middle of this whole thing and announces in the public platform to say they now have court orders for 9 buildings and they will be conducting those raids very soon.
Why not keep quiet and raid?
Again.
Because you've got the paper that says we are allowed in the building.
Exactly.
Shh. Go do the raid.
And flesh. The other thing also with our democracy and legal practices, I still do not understand why would the city of Johannesburg, if they own a building and they think there is illegal activities happening, why should they first go and get a court order? I don't understand that. I own the building.
Mm.
In my records, that building is supposed to be empty.
So you're a trespasser.
So there's trespassers there. Why should I go to court first and say there's trespass? To raid, not to throw people out.
Mm.
To throw people out, I understand there's elements of humanitarian
there's
accommodation.
The Constitution says.
But to go and say, I suspect in that building,
my building
that is supposed to be empty
or
used as a classroom, I see that is not being used as a classroom. I therefore want to go and check what is happening there. Why should I still go to court? Then after you get a court order, you go and you announce in a public platform. I don't think, you know, they carried the same operation in KwaZulu-Natal, actually in the metro of Durban.
Sure.
This past week. We never knew about it. Mm. That's why it was successful. It was regarded as successful.
Yes.
Over 180 illegal foreigners, as well as
many
drug
armed.
Traffickers,
many
some
armed.
And yeah. they were arrested.
Mm.
It is a swift operation. We always tell people, military people as well as law enforcers, they're not drum majorettes.
Sure.
You don't go and play drums when you are approaching or do the sirens.
Mm.
You decide you have this operation and you carry out that operation.
And if you must PR it when you've done the job.
Once the job is done.
Don't PR it before.
I mean, last week, Sunday, one of those buildings burned in Joburg, and four people died. Another building, you know, caught fire and four people died. And now we want to react to that, understand, by getting court orders. I think his intention or the intentions of the mayoral committee of the city of Joburg is good intentions.
Sure.
The, how they do it is where the problem is. And I think the mayor of Johannesburg must slow down a little bit. And the advantage he has is that he's not just a political head. He's an executive mayor.
Absolutely.
So he can enter into some of operations and give guidance. But let Dada start behaving like a real township boy, man. You know, he has grown up in Joburg. He should be knowing what to do.
Abeslame,
man. And look, his MMCs, and fortunately, they didn't change them. MMC Kenny Kunian of the Patriotic Alliance is heading the transport sector, and the MMC what is his name, Dr. Mtrini Chwaku of the EFF is heading the law enforcement. So actually the Metropolis will fall under Chwaku. They had those operations several times last year, and they were very successful in Yeovil and Hillbrow and so forth. So they didn't announce, they pounced on suspected criminals.
But I think what's also important is they have to be unrelenting about it. It can't just be a PR exercise and say, look, this is what we did.
Yes.
And it must be unrelenting such that people who are occupying these buildings illegally or people who are not documented have nowhere to hide.
Exactly. And also, they must continue. You know, they continue or continue. They must not do it once, then we clap hands, then these people go in and fill up. Look at what is that Operation Valamkot. Not Valamkot, it's for portals. There's one for the illegal miners or the so-called Zamazamas.
Yes.
That has continued for months now. Yes, it is still a problem in the province, but that a joint operation between SAPS and South African National Defense Force is bearing results, you know, because that was not only about illegal mining. That was about other dangers that these illegal miners are causing to communities, to motorists, and to normal residents and citizens. I mean, the other day I told you I drove from the studio to my parents' home in Randfontein via the main Reef Road, because that's the road I'm used to driving from Joburg to West Rand. I won't drive on that road again, because I feel like one day even something will explode. And as one, the road is in very terrible state.
Sure.
But it's when I see this, I mean, you can see these Zamazama people moving up and down, you know, and it's happening in front of our
eyes. It's a whole crime scene.
Nah, it's a whole crime scene. I'm telling you, you know, Joburg is a crime scene. And you referred to the mayor of New York, the ex-mayor of New York the other time.
Oh, Giuliani.
Giuliani, yes. I think somebody must buy that book. As a gift, the next 2 years is sitting in that office. He can do very well. He can work very well with the team he has to stabilize Joburg and make it a safe place to live and work in.
And in fact, speaking of safety, Panyaza Lesufi, Premier Panyaza Lesufi, was doing an interview on Talk Radio 702, and he was talking about the fact that he's going to bring in experts because something's got to give regarding crime in Gauteng, and that he's willing to resign if he fails. But something has got to give.
And look, I think as residents of Gauteng, we should give the premier and the mayors of these metros and municipalities, and his entire Gauteng, right? Whether you are in the Rand West, whether you're in Ekurhuleni or in Tshwane or wherever, the entire Gauteng, we cannot sit down and say, hey, it's dangerous to live in Gauteng. And we are doing nothing about it as the society or the residents.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
I think we should rally behind the premier to make sure that we live safe in our with our communities.
But like I was saying earlier on, for instance, regarding the raiding of buildings and other operations that they set up, if you're not consistent with it, you're not going to get results.
And
consistency is as fertile as inconsistency.
But also, what will also aid them? You know, it's one thing to go and raid and arrest and clean the area, and the judiciary drops the ball.
Yes. Or the investigators.
Or the investigators the or what. So this needs a very special, Gauteng needs a special operation from top to bottom.
Yeah.
And from the whole value chain of combating crime. They must not say we arrested, we got the drugs. And then let's say, I mean, look at the volume of drugs that our police officers are capturing and arresting people in this country and in Joburg and everywhere else. What happens to those cases?
Yeah.
You understand? Also, we don't follow up as media to see where, how far did the prosecution go? What happened to those drugs? Are they destroyed or do they get stolen from police safe places? And because they are needed as exhibit to present in court. But I also first think our lawmakers must really look at what the Criminal Procedure Act requires as exhibit in court. And let me tell you, you use mitigating factors to minimize the risks. For example, let's use drugs. If you catch somebody with drugs, the court will require to see the drugs as exhibit.
Yeah.
If they are not there, the case may collapse. Now, there's a risk to that because those drugs must be stored somewhere.
Sure.
And a criminal case like for drug trafficking or drug producing or drug laboratories, it can take years. So imagine the risk that whole, say, 100 kilogram of cocaine sitting somewhere in the police safe where it's supposed to be safe. But reality says we know it may disappear from those police safekeeping places. How about we change our laws in the country to say if there's video recording of what was captured, if there's certificate from scientists to confirm that this thing on this video has the certificate, we confirm it was cocaine or an illegal substance, they must then be destroyed immediately. And the exhibit should be the videos, the photos, and the laboratory or medical certificate of those goods, instead of us hoarding them, waiting for the case to end. I'm talking about, you know, mitigating the risk of keeping illegal substances in police stations or in safekeeping places. Let's rather find a way that we pass the law. I understand by law now, they must have them. But why don't we change the law to say they must be destroyed immediately in a public place, you understand? And also, those goods, for example, stolen vehicles or vehicles that were used to commit crime, if there's no owner coming to claim them, don't destroy those ones and park them at what we call 13 there in the restaurant in Kagiso.
Sure.
Understand? When police don't have vehicles, you know, in Italy, what they did in years back, I don't know if it's still the rule, the criminals and mafias were outclassing the police because they were driving supercars.
Oh, yeah, so they got Lamborghinis.
So the police and they got Lamborghinis. And then when they capture criminals with crime proceeds and there's a Lamborghini, they don't destroy it. It becomes the police vehicle.
Ah, yes.
You understand? So why do you take goods and things from criminals and you auction them when your police don't have a van to can go and attend to a crime scene, convert some to ambulances? You understand? Why destroy these holdings or auction them and take money that politicians will end up stealing anyway?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so for me, that's a thing that let's change the law as well.
Yes, sir. Speaking of the law, let's go to our Justice Minister. President Ramaphosa, we're told, wants answers from Justice Minister Simelane regarding a loan that she got amidst the VBS money laundering that was happening.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I actually wanted to ask you, what do you think the president want to talk to Simelane about? I wanted to ask you that, but I was thinking, is Mr. Ramaphosa going to really ask her to come and explain? I mean, the information is in the public space. To come and talk for herself, present her side of
the
story. She
says it was a loan for a coffee shop in Sandton, and she's paid it back. So what's the problem, guys?
Well, again, yeah. Also, that's not the problem.
And how was she to know that that money was paid?
Fresh conflict of interest, you know better. I'm sitting at home, I'm fired from my
no
work.
Me, I'm playing the devil's advocate here.
Conflict of interest,
yeah.
The first question is going to be, she was that time and Thembi Nkadime, the executive mayor of the city of Polokwane,
yes,
okay, at that time. Now, the question is, did she declare that business interest? That's going to be one of the first things. at that time, because if you are in that position, you must declare business interest as it's required.
Okay, so the so-called coffee shop.
Yes.
That she says she needed a loan to open.
Yes.
Are you saying, did she declare the coffee shop?
Yes, she must have declared. Yeah.
But surely,
that's the first part.
Yeah, but also the law is very clear about municipalities putting money into mutual banks.
I was going to come into that. The second part is, look, the law cannot dictate where I must borrow money from. If Fresh is my brother or friend or Trevor, whoever, I can borrow money from them. But it becomes a problem once you start borrowing money for as an executive mayor of Orofo Metro from people that, and you remember earlier on when we spoke of that, I said executive mayors, they are not just ceremonial.
Sure.
So the people that does business with your municipality, and you go, you know, this guy is a consultant. He's consulting on behalf of VBS that you must invest illegally, so state monies into the VBS mutual bank.
Sure.
It's illegal because the law does not allow that. That's the first thing. The same person who's negotiating that deal on behalf of VBS is a broker. You go to the same person.
He did his job. The bank went broke.
So you go to that person and you borrow money in your private capacity. I already said there's nothing wrong in borrowing money from anybody in your private capacity.
But a conflict is a
conflict. There's a conflict of interest there. And I just pray for her that she had declared that at that time.
Sure.
The sad part where we are now is that the coffee shop does not exist.
Yeah.
That's the latest news. That coffee shop is not there. It doesn't exist.
And then she says she's paid back the money.
Yes.
But is there evidence of that?
Well, we don't know. We'll hear when the NPA and others, they proceed with this. But I want to bring this politically and to say...
Before you go politically, again, we're still talking about conflict. But surely also as Justice Minister, going after people that looted this bank...
Yes.
...is another conflict.
Yeah, it's another conflict.
Because you're going after the person that gave you R500,000.
Yes. You are supposed to be going after that person through what? Through one of your arms or your entities, the National Prosecuting Authority.
Sure, sure.
It's you know, it reported. But she's also a member, a senior member of what we call the justice cluster of cabinet. You know,
sure.
They've got clusters. So she's actually completed more than once, you know, in this instance.
So why does the president need a meeting or an explanation?
Yeah, that was the question.
Is it not clear-cut?
Actually, for me, it's clear-cut. But you know what Minister C. Melani would have done? And I always tell people, it's not to say you are pleading guilty.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? The great thing you have done is to pull a Zizi Kodwa on this thing. Step aside. Resign and leave this whole thing to say, and look, I mean, you are dealing with what, 540,000?
And if you feel you've done nothing wrong, you can still declare that I don't think I've done anything wrong. I'm not admitting any guilt.
Yes, yes.
But for purposes of not... spilling blood on my portfolio, on my ministry, I will step back
until my name is cleared. You understand? Yeah. And you also, what you can do is to aid the system and the process to move fast on your better, so that you must not stay outside for a long time. And that's why I'm thinking this meeting is unnecessary, but maybe President Ramaphosa will, you know, is following protocol to say, I sat down with her and we have agreed that she will step down or no, she's not leaving. It can go either way. But I was thinking about this.
I foresee maybe 2 or 3 months salary being forfeited and then life carries on.
Now, you see, if he does that, if forfeit for what? Forfeit for what? Remember those who had forfeited their salary like in the past?
Yeah.
Like,
they were naughty during COVID.
They were naughty. One of my favorite ministers, Stella Ndabeni.
I'm going to declare right now, me, I've got a crush on Minister Stella. If you need a DJ anywhere, a minister, call me.
No, Fresh, this is my platform to talk politics. your crush is there. And I hope Minister...
No, it's at a ministerial level.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I hope
it's not that I'm looking for a minister for my heart.
Okay. Oh, I hope Minister Ndavini doesn't watch this show, so that she must not hear that you've got a crush on her.
No, she'll find out. My minister. Hi.
Anyway, I was saying, you see on that, it was a penalty. It was a punitive thing. So it means I've done something wrong.
Yes.
But it doesn't warrant...
I was naughty.
Now, if President Ramaphosa is going to do that on this is a criminal matter.
Sure.
I've mentioned it has an issue of conflict of interest. It has issues of declarations. I mean, for example, I'm a junior, you know, I'm not a politician, but I work for government. I'm sitting at home because of declaration of interest. Sure. Not even conflict.
Mm.
Understand? If you recall why I was dismissed from work, it's because I co-published my biography.
Sure.
And the employer said, but you never declared that you've got a publishing company.
Sure.
You understand? Mm. So there was no conflict because I don't work for a publication.
Exactly.
I didn't take money. Yeah. But that's neither here nor there.
And you declared the book anyway.
I declared. That's why eventually a lower court came and said, but he declared.
Yeah.
This company, whether he declared wrong or right or what, or but he declared. So in any way. So that's another, I don't think President Ramaphosa will go there. But this is the political part that I wanted to bring in Minister Simelane's what is her first name? Tembi.
Sure.
Tembi Simelane. Fresh, this VBS thing and the report. Remember, there's a full investigative report on VBS. Do you guys, fellow South Africans, politicians, DA, EFF, and whoever is raising this issue now, want to tell me that in the two investigative reports of the VBS, was Minister Simelane's name not there when they were conducted years back?
Sure.
When the Daily Maverick Media House, as well as the Sunday Times and all others who are behind this whole, and the Democratic Alliance and AfriForum and others now, when they were reading these reports and they were going for the Fletcher Bambos of this world, the EFF, and was Minister Simelane's name not there? Why are they bringing it now? Because the name must have been there.
Sure.
The name must have been mentioned somewhere, because there's also been declarations by some of the people who have been accused for looting the VBS bank. So why are they going for her now? And that's, for me, that's where it becomes political.
Sure.
And this is my suspect. AfriForum has become an administrative legal wing of the Democratic Alliance or White Capital. While OUTA has become the civic movement of the Democratic Alliance and white supremacists in this country. Minister Simelane, as the Minister of, what do they call
Justice.
It? Justice. Is supposed to be telling or guiding or overseeing that some of her comrades in the African National Congress, some who happens to be fellow MPs and fellow cabinet ministers, are charged and prosecuted for various criminal money laundering, corruption activities, whether they emanate from individual investigations or from BOSASA, including the president and the son, or from the Zondo Commission.
I was going to say, from the Zondo Commission alone,
yes,
her hands are full.
Yeah, exactly. You understand? She's supposed to be implementing that on behalf of the government of national unity, that as they call it.
Sure.
And now the Democratic Alliance and all other political parties and the opposition, which is Umkhonto we Sizwe, as well as the EFF at the moment, number one and number two as opposition, they are sitting and saying, we want to see if you are going to prosecute your fellow cabinet members,
Sure.
you are going to charge them as well as that. And that's the problem she's sitting with, and she's not doing that. And I think they went for her because she's failing to act on this that are supposed to be prosecuted.
And the argument again is, could she be conflicted being in that position?
Look, at the moment now, she's very conflicted because now she's supposed to be going for the people who have committed crimes like her, and not necessarily with VBS. There's various ministers who are implicated in various forms of corruption and maladministration. I mean, I can mention the tiger, the minister of minerals. He's been mentioned for Obosasa benefits and things. They are not guilty. They have been mentioned. There's allegations. So there must be investigations by the police. There must be investigations by the National Prosecuting Authority and decision whether they are prosecuting them or not. And they must face the law. Now, we have casualties. We have the former Speaker of Parliament facing criminal charges and corruption charges. We've got the former Minister of Arts, Sports and Culture and Minister in the Presidency for the state security. And what about others?
For
what about other political office bearers from the municipal level right up to the presidency? You know, I made a quip this week to say the president's robbers, the canoe men, who the only men that I know moved from one country in the Orange River to another after robbing the farm of the president, was in court last week on Monday.
Yeah.
And something came to my mind. How come that South Africans are not worried that the number one citizen, President Cyril Ramaphosa, domestic helper, is a foreign national? She's Namibian. The lady who gave the mastermind Emmanuela the information, she's also Namibian. Mm. So President Ramaphosa thinks the people of Limpopo who are unemployed, who don't have money, who don't have jobs, they don't deserve to be domestic workers in her private farm.
Mm.
You know, that just crossed my mind. Why would the president hire a foreign national to be a domestic worker? When there's so many people from Venda, where he originates from, I know he was grew up in Soweto or born in Soweto.
And we all have a cousin at
we
the village.
We all have Mam Kulu
who needs a job.
We all have Mam Nani, Mam Kulu who needs a job, especially a prime job as a domestic worker in a game reserve that is having international. He could have taken a few students from the hospitality industry and worked there. But that's story for another day.
Absolutely. In fact, earlier on, we spoke about the fact that Justice Minister alone with the Zondo Commission has a hands full.
Yeah.
And this week is Justice Zondo's last week in office.
Yes.
Does he have a legacy worth looking at and saying, wow, what a justice?
Oh, I like it. Wow, what a justice. Fresh, you know, I've got passion for the judiciary, the third arm, because I'm a failed law student or graduate, whatever.
I did 2 years, so I'm I'm a dropout.
At least I finished some, you know.
No, well done,
public administration has law in it. I had to do public law as one of my majors.
Mm.
But so I had followed the, and I wanted to be a lawyer when I grew up. So the people who had shaped me in the legal background, the Justice Musinike, you know, we were both Pan-Africanists, and he was known as Advocate Musinike at that time. He studied law while he was in Robben Island, the Pius Langas, the Mokwe-Mokwe-ens, and all that. And I sat and I watched a whole gala dinner where the current or the outgoing, well, it's already out now, it's, you know, he said his last day in office, what is his name, Justice Zondo.
Yes.
And they were talking about his legacy. First, I did not know that he was very close, personal friends with Mokweng, his
predecessor,
from varsity times, you know, because Mokweng studied in Zululand.
Yes.
And also, that he was at the helm of what is of interest to me, the Labour Court of South Africa, over 10 years, over a decade as the judge president of the Labour Court. And I'll come to that. And I listen to what people are saying when they talk of the legacy he's leaving. And I was listening to almost everybody. And people are talking about a legacy as if the Zondo Commission was his primary job. That was a commission. That was, he was the chairperson. That was not. It could have been anybody else who could have chaired that.
Yes.
That commission.
Mm.
And you will recall that by the time the former Chief Justice Mokwe-Mokweng chose him to preside over the Zondo Commission, Justice Mokwe-Mokweng could have chaired it himself, because that's what President Zuma would have preferred. Or Justice Mokwe-Mokweng would have taken any other constitutional court. Or high court justice. It could have been any.
Yes.
So I think it is wrong to limit the focus on Justice Zondo only on the Zondo Commission, which I call the Zondo Circus, actually. Because, you know, that I will not forgive South Africans for allowing the Zondo Commission fresh. We wasted $2 billion on a, what I call it, a gossip platform of corrupt political office bearers, because that's what happened there. It was corrupt political office bearers who were mainly, if not all, from the then ruling African National Congress. We spent $2 billion. We paid high-end lawyers. A lot of money. Those lawyers who were there prosecuting and what, they walked to the bench smiling. And today, not even a single individual has faced the might of the law. Judge, prosecuted, and sent to jail.
Yeah, but NPA boss Shamila Batori was at Justice Zondo's farewell.
Yes.
And she said, not to worry, guys.
Yeah, no, we are still coming.
We've got this.
Yeah, until when? The same mayor, advocate Shamila Batori, few months back, she was lamenting that that won't fly because they don't have the budget, they don't have the resources, they don't have the money. Now, suddenly, when it is on the gala dinner, like, we've got this, we're going to, when? What is delay? There was a commission, there were investigations, there were witnesses who came there, there were documents who were provided. Again, it's what I always lament about, the delayed justice.
Yeah.
It becomes injustice. Not only for those who are There's a cloud hanging above their heads who are alleged to have committed acts of corruption and state capture and maladministration, not only unfair to them, but unfair to us as a nation as well, where our monies were squandered. And now you even use ₹2 billion to investigate the theft of people, you understand? So I think they're delaying with this whole process. Look, I don't think it will bear any fruit. I put my last penny on the table. I don't think that a gossip that lasted almost few months will bear any fruit. Mm. But we were talking about the departure of Justice Zondo and the incoming of...
And the legacy.
So for me, I don't regard the Zondo Commission as the legacy. The gentleman has been in the legal fraternity from, I think, 1996 as a judge. Mm. One of the people who came young as a judge, and they've been there forever. I mean, he started at lower courts. He before he moved to the Concord, and he became a chief justice only for two years of his term, or three, if maximum. But I will look at the Labour Court as his legacy, because that's where he served two terms, full two terms, over 10 years as the judge president of the Labour Court in this country, you know, the Labour Court. And being, embroiled in a labour dispute myself with the Labour Court, I will say when I look at the Labour Court, there is no legacy that Justice Zondo is supposed to pride himself with. Mm. When I look at what is happening in the Labour Court, he was a judge president. Mm. I know he's not responsible as the justice person for administrative issues and processes and all that. But the Labour Court, and I don't know about Labour Courts in other provinces.
Sure.
I can only talk about the Labour Court in Gauteng. It's a complete mess, Fresh. A whole lot of a mess to have had somebody who move above the rank. Because, by the way, Justice Zondo move above the rank, as I said. He started at the lower courts, the high court, up to the constitutional court, and the number one justice person in this country. And when I look at the Labour Court, the mess that is in the Labour Court, and one can say to me, but Botsan, you are not fair. You can't attribute that to the head. I said, but to who should I attribute to? If the fish rots from the head.
On whose watch did it happen?
On whose watch did it happen? And I said, you know, in my other conversation last week that the labor issues in South Africa were during the liberation movement, at the heartbeat of the liberation movement. The labor unions and federations, the NACTUs and the COSATUs were the strongholds of liberation movements. When we transcended into the Democratic Republic, and then we had, you know, labor laws that are protecting us now, we had, you know, the network in working in with parliament to can create labor laws. That is supposed to form the nucleus of the working class and the working force. And if we fail with the labor court, people wait for 5-6 years for their labor matters to be heard. I protected Justice Zondo as the chief justice when he said they don't have the money. They don't have the judges. The cabinet or treasury is not giving them money to hire judges. But when I enter the labor court, I can tell you, Fresh, not even basics. They're filing, there's files all over the floor. There's whole chaos there. And for me, the head should have stood up, especially being a senior judge in the country. Then he moves on to become a constitutional court judge. The labor court is infringing on constitutional rights of the workers. They're infringing on them. Now you become a constitutional court judge after becoming a labor court judge president. And you don't even elevate these matters, you know, to the constitutional court to say, but you are infringing on you know, livelihoods of human beings and people.
Yeah, a lot of people's lives are literally on standstill. At a standstill.
My life has been on standstill for the last 2 years. You understand? The labor laws are unjust in this country. That I can tell. One day I'll make a full document on how the labor laws are unjust towards the workers. They favor more those who have the money and those who are the employer.
And unfortunately, big business and government, arms of government,
Who are having money to can fight this battle.
Who are not spending their own money.
Exactly.
Can keep disgruntled employees tied up in the courts.
Exactly, and that's where we are. That's why I'm a living proof that the government entities or private companies. I've seen a lot of files in the labor court. I've seen people who are saying, I've been running this case for the last 6 years. 6 years. Mm. People go to court to get justice. Mm. And we still call that justice. That cannot be justice. And the judiciary...
And you were there the other day. You're saying there's files all over the floor.
Bro, you know, it's just that I've got a matter pending.
So files could disappear, Mus.
And let me tell you, when we enter the labor court, what happens? There's security guards and there's a sluice, metal detector.
Thing. Sure.
Obviously, it can't detect documents. Mm. And there's lawyers coming in and out there with briefcases. I can take a briefcase and walk in there. They only check it when you go out.
Sure.
What is there? And you know what they look for? Mm. Court files. You can't take a court file out.
Yes.
Now I look at this whole thing. I can leave the file there and take documents as they are.
Exactly.
And walk out of that court. My own court file disappeared in the labor court for the last 2 weeks. Mm. I had to kick doors and scream and tumble and phone the highest office of the land to say, I want my... And then it suddenly resurfaced. Mm. And you know, my cousin called me and said to me, imagine if that would have happened to a noble citizen who doesn't have guts like you, who doesn't know his rights, who can't kick doors and all those things. So I am saying is we are doing a disservice as a nation to the people, especially the courts, especially the labor court. And I pray and hope that the incoming Chief Justice, Maya, being a mother, let that instinct of motherhood kick in.
Sure.
And let her engage and look at, you know, special courts like the labor court, that they are also going to serve the people, to serve the intended benefactors of justice and labor. And not to say criminal courts or magistrate courts or commercial courts are not important. But all that I'm saying is if you are in a battle with an employer who can spend $5 million on you or on legal fees to delay and derail and delay and derail, what is the justice system saying to us as noble and normal citizens?
Absolutely.
And I don't think there is justice in that process.
And you know, we can throw around phrases like justice delayed is justice denied, but if things are not done expeditiously, things are being delayed. People with money can tie up cases because they know that, okay, Butsang is unemployed. Therefore, he might struggle if we prolong this process.
Exactly. And give up on it.
With taxpayers' money.
Exactly. With taxpayers' money. So it's abuse of state resources. Mm. You understand? Although the law is talking about expedition. Now let me make an example with the labor law.
Sure.
The Labor Relations Act in terms of when people take matters on review to the labor court, they will call it in criminal courts on appeal.
Sure.
They say this matter must be, one, expeditiously be completed as soon as possible, especially from the CCMA, which is a lower court, okay? Then they even put a period to say, if you have delayed at least 12 months. Mm. Now, 12 months is a lot not to have an income.
Absolutely.
But they put a period. Now you have cases that have taken over 12 months. Mm. And the state is not saying anything about that. On why are we here? Why are we sitting in a labor dispute that is now over 12 months when the prescripts of the Labor Relations Act mention a maximum period of 12 months when the matter under review has to be heard? Mm. Then you've got people who have been sitting on cases for years. And I think, you know, Fresh, maybe me being in a labor dispute of this nature, it's the first time of this nature at this level. Maybe it was a calling. You know, I said that to myself to say, maybe it was a calling to consider what is happening there, then I can expose or fight that, you know, unjust process. Because if we don't talk about it, if we don't have journalists and media people who write specifically about such things, the poor people, the unemployed and the suffering people will scream and tumble on the side and nothing will be done.
Absolutely.
And I think looking at the legacy of Justice Zondo, look, I focus mainly on the labor court because he served more term there. At the Concord, he didn't serve, you know, a lot of time at the Concord. And again, the constitutional court also, you know, you are not alone. You don't sit alone there and there's a bench and there's others. Even if you deep. So there's people who crowd you and cloud you.
You're part of a team.
It's part of a team.
So you can never be the number 10
yeah.
Or be the top goal scorer.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's part. So I don't undermine the importance of the work that is being done by constitutional court judges. Mm. I'm not saying that. Sure. I'm simply saying if I want to look at the best, it's I will say the court of this era to this era did its job properly.
Absolutely.
But as individuals, I will look at where you started your career and you came up.
And what have you done outside of the team?
What have you done? What are exceptional and outstanding things that you have done that we can look back and say, wow, one thing that I can give him credit for is whether people say he played politically or not. But when he was the Chief Justice, he was brave enough to jail a former president, and we had a number of problems and people dying. Whether it's negative or not, but he was brave enough to say, I don't care who you are, whether you are a Fubi or Zbari, or whether you are the former president or what, I'll send you to jail. And that's one of the things I can see, that he was brave enough. But He from the Constitutional Court to become the Chief Justice, the time span was very limited.
Sure.
So I will look at before, and I'm saying, that is one, I'm very sorry, scorecard, Labour Court, 1 out of 10.
Sure.
Because that's the experience that I have as a citizen. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. So one of the headlines is Saxon World moves to Parliament.
Yes.
Another headline says state capture suspects sworn in as MK party MPs. What are your thoughts on the moves that the MK party are making? I mean, you even have Papa Penny sworn in as a member of parliament.
Yeah, but put a disclaimer there. Papa Penny was not part of the state capture.
No, he wasn't. But I'm just saying that the MK are moving intentionally here.
Yeah, fresh.
It's what I'm picking up.
Okay, yeah. No. You've got it right. Look, let me start with... I think the MK has become, what is the word that you would use? They've become crude about their intention to take over the country.
Sure.
And to have anybody who is being seen as one former RET forces,
sure,
to anybody that was seen to be on the side of President Zuma.
I was going to say, some are saying JZ is also rewarding those that have been loyal to him.
That have been loyal to him. Well, people are saying that.
Yeah.
But again, I said something as a Pan-Africanist, because Umkhonto-West is I was so excited when they pronounced that they are a Pan-Africanist organization or movement. Fresh, what is wrong? And this is how I look at it. And I'll come to the media and shenanigans of individuals.
Sure.
What is wrong in Banabam by the children that comes from one womb, you know, organizing themselves, wrong or right, whether they've got a bad name in the past, coming together and say, we have been pointing fingers at each other. We have, some of us have been in one group. They come together, and I've talked in this platform before about rallying and uniting under the banner of Pan-Africanism,
sure,
on African nationalism, and saying we've got a common goal. Mm. Our common goal is to fight for the return of the land, is to defeat white supremacy,
sure,
to fight white capital, and to defeat the ANC out of power. Mm. Whether they are former ANC people or not, to say the ANC that is existing today is not serving our peoples. Mm. We'll therefore group together. Whether you say you call it ganging together or grouping together, or you all have skirmishes or what, you know, or allegations and bad backgrounds. For me, that's not the issue. Mm. The issue is these are the people with a common goal and common interest and are coming together. And I look at it from that perspective. Mm. But the second part is none of those people there has been charged and found guilty of any crime, corruption, you know what? None, not even one of them. Mm. The same way we can sit here and say there are over 10 ANC leaders and ministers who have been alleged to have committed acts of corruption. They're still ministers today.
Sure.
Life goes on. They're still leaders of the ANC. They've just got re-elected into those positions. And why, when the other kids do it, we want to call them names? Why don't we call the Ramaphosa team to say, but these ministers, they bet Ramaphosa towards the 2017 1 billion rand conference that was funded by white capital. Why are we not saying that? Mm. It's politics. That's how it plays. You understand?
Yes, sir.
I think for me, these are politicians. Mm. But what Umkhonto-West has done is they are also bringing technocrats.
Sure.
Brian Molefe is not a politician.
No.
I bumped on him the other day, you know, because we come from the same region in Tshwane, and he was on the ground wearing green and conversing from controversy because they were by elections. So there's also technocrats and experts. Penny or Papa Penny, he is naturally a crowd puller,
sure,
because he's a musician of a traditional Tsonga. What is MK doing with Papa Penny? They want to penetrate Limpopo.
I was going to say to you, the Floyd move, the Papa Penny move, for me is intentional about, is they are showing intentionality, if there is a, if there's a word,
and it's
about that, Limpopo.
And now it has added Colleen Makubela.
Yes.
From Sarah, you understand? She has come. They are very serious about Limpopo because we know that Limpopo and the Eastern Cape are the strongholds of the ANC. Mm. So there's a very clear intention. These guys, they know what they are doing, whether we like it or not, whether we like them or not, but they know what they are doing. Their plans are very clear and they are moving with this whole thing.
Yep.
They don't care every day. What is just disturbing me with the MK? And I have to mention this because I care for people. Mm. It's these internal squabbles and people being removed and moved. And look, I always said to people, you must never take politics as a career.
Oh, yes.
But also, never sacrifice your career, if you've got a career, for a political position.
You're expendable.
Yeah, you understand? Exactly. Yeah. And that's where the mistake. Mm. I wish and I pray and I hope that controversies with leaders, from President Zuma to whoever, they can find it among themselves to have, for example, these 18 members who have gone to court to go and fight to say some have lost their jobs.
Mm.
You know, somebody who have come to say, I was recruiting for a political party from the ground to what? I don't care about such people because you are not there. You are claiming that you are joining a political movement to build it up for a certain purpose, not for a career.
Mm.
But people who resigned from their jobs. Let's say you had a job as a clerk somewhere.
Sure.
And you resigned because your organization said we are deployed to parliament and two months down the line, they are recalling you from without doing anything wrong.
Mm.
I don't think there is any normal human being who, if they knew that it's temporary to go there.
Or at least I won't last a year.
Or at least I would last, you would have left your job if you had a job.
Mm.
If you had a job and income. Talk about people who were employed specifically.
Mm.
And I think for humanitarian purpose, Ubuntu, this political party, not only them, including the EFF and others, they must find it among themselves to care for the people. Because I always say, when you take my job away from me or my salary, it's not only me who suffers, it's everybody else who is dependent on me.
Mm.
And I think it will also help them politically to stabilize the organization. It's at infancy stages.
Mm.
But look, they've got the creme de la creme of South African government and governance there. I mean, who wouldn't want to sit in a room with Justice Shope, Andile Ngqikama, Brian Molefe, Lucky Montana?
Sure.
And
love them or hate them, they are administrators, they are organizers, they are movers.
And you bring the Floyd Shivambo there and now Colleen Makubela. Remember, these people are professionals in their own fields.
Yeah.
And it can only be fear or jealousy that makes us to say they're a bunch of criminals or what, but how many of them has been to jail for criminal activities or found guilty?
Mm.
Actually, many of them have been cleared of whatever allegations were made against them. And unfortunately, it's politics, bro. That's how politics work in the world. That's how politics work. I mean, we have the president of America going to elections now while he's facing serious, treasonous charges.
Absolutely.
Understand?
And he won't beat all of the charges.
Obviously, I mean, so many charges. We've got President Zuma this past week was back in court for the, the arms deal and corruption charges.
Mm.
And so it's part of the game. And let's hope that in future, as South Africa grows and develops, and I still bank on Justice Maya, that this separation of powers, you know, from the state judiciary, the state executives, and the legislative authority. Let's hope that it will improve as we move forward, as we mature.
Yes, sir.
And with the so-called government of national unity, again, I said it last week, I'm one of the people who believe this government of national unity will collapse sooner. But let me quickly tell you why. Did you see what Panyaza did in Gauteng? Gauteng is going to collapse. The government of national unity. And I am told the DA has dared the ANC to remove the mayor of Tshwane.
Oh, yes.
Because there's the last metro remaining.
Oh, yeah. Celia Brink basically is facing a motion.
He's facing
of
a motion.
No
yes. Understand? And that's the last hope for the DA.
Mm.
And if they do that, the whole of Gauteng will be back at the ends of the ANC, which I think is also undemocratic, that the ANC lost the metros and they got them through the coffee table.
Mm.
Understand? Yes, somebody may say if they are smart negotiators, they've negotiated themselves back into power.
Sure.
But what does it say to the residents or the citizens of Gauteng and those metros.
Yes,
I want to see the DA's reaction once Brink has been removed out of power. Then the whole of the Gauteng province, from provincial to metros, will be, the DA will be out of government. Remember, they're not part of the provincial government.
Oh, yes.
They were left out. And I want to see the impact that it's going to do towards the national government. I mean, last week we spoke about how the Democratic Alliance stood up and boycotted the presidential imbizo. I mean, you are part of, what do you call it? You are part of a government.
Sure.
They're not an opposition. And I'm very disappointed that to this day, President Ramaphosa, he jumps quickly to call the lady Simelane to come and answer for things that happened when, or that came out just past week. A week before, the DA ministers misbehaved. They disrespected their boss, the man who employed them, who gave them jobs. They didn't go to the presidential imbizo.
Yeah.
I don't say the imbizo is a good thing. I agree with the DA for a change. That this presidential imbizo is a waste of money. You know, they spent over 43 million rents, I think, for this imbizos only this time. And I agree with the DA, it's a waste of money because we don't see the fruits. It's a talk show. But these guys, they defy their master. They defy, in work environment, what do they call it? Insubordination.
Yes, absolutely.
That's insubordination. Your principal calls ex-committee to say, let's meet and let's go and engage with stakeholders and our clients. And you are like, I'm not going there because you are wasting money.
Exactly.
And the president is quiet about that. The president is quiet that the DA ministers showed him a middle finger. And it's okay, We can be quiet that who's running the country? Who's the head of the cabinet?
But isn't this coalition government, as many believe it actually is, also based on the premise that we will also agree to disagree where we need to?
Yeah, fresh. That's in parliament. MPs there can vote and disagree. For example, the DA has taken the government to court regarding the Eskom tariff increase. Okay, NERSA, government, and Eskom are the respondent. That's okay. That is normal.
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm talking about. That's not how you disagree.
Exactly.
Insubordination and derelegation of duties. They failed to perform their duties. They were absent to go and engage with the communities. Or the nation about housing. Okay, the housing minister comes from somewhere, but whatever issue, agriculture, for example, there's a growing of development of in-house agriculture in Gauteng. And the minister of agriculture was not there, Stian Hazel. He was not there. So that is actually insubordination and refusing to perform your duties, because his duties were supposed to come and engage me as a resident of Gauteng that wants to be a farmer in Gauteng, whether I farm wheat or I farm chicken or whatever. And he failed to do that. He actually told the boss, I'm not coming to that meeting, it's a useless meeting. And the president cannot actually keep quiet. I want to see one day when Gaitin McKenzie or the PAC leader that his party is saying is there illegally refuse to perform their duties, if President Ramaphosa is going to take kind of that. Or one of the ANC ministers, imagine Sputa Ramukupa not going to address the people about, they don't call it load shedding, load reduction.
Yes.
Will the president say, it's okay, Sputa, go there and dance and don't come to my meeting? I think the president...
What would you have the president
is,
do?
Is treating the DA with kid's gloves?
Sure.
Or is scared of the DA?
Or is managing the relationship?
No. If this is managing the relationship, it's mismanaging it, actually. If you have a relationship and you let your partner or your spouse to do as they wish, to say, this Friday, I'm not sleeping at home.
No, but also you need to remember, as a former married person, just as I am, you choose your battles in your partnership.
Which ones
you choose? What is worth scorched earth and what is worth I let it slide?
That it's going to continue. And when others start behaving, when the kids start conducting themselves
the way Mama and Papa are doing,
you will fail to handle that situation. But it's a wait and see. This marriage of convenience between the DA And the ANC, I've said when it started, it is not GNU because the former GNU had a guiding document.
Absolutely.
We didn't have the constitution. From 1994 to 1996, we had an interim constitution that made a way and presented a document for guiding the GNU. This marriage of convenience that has the DA took the Moonpeck short agreement and you know, change it here and there. They put cosmetics to it to can fit the two losers because they were both losers. Mm. So the two losers went into a coalition and invited the hungry ones out to say, we have a cake here and we are going to eat, come and join us. It is an unprincipled GNU. It's a misguided. And when we talk about this, I said this GNU is like having an unguarded missile or an unguarded, you know, machine gun. And it's very dangerous to can hire people. I mean, I've used a simple example of saying he hired them as ministers. Mm. We always talk and say it is the president's prerogative. Where is that prerogative now? Well, now you were saying he's managing a volatile relationship.
Mm.
Where is the prerogative? Remember, in appointing cabinet ministers, there's no equality there.
Sure.
It is governed by the constitution.
Absolutely.
You are guided by the constitution. Mm. They've got duties to perform. Do you want to tell me that one day if Stian Hazen can decide to sell his BMW or X5 of the state and buy tractors for farmers in the Western Cape, the president will say he's doing the right thing, it's okay. When there are rules of what should happen to that BMW. Mm. You understand what I'm talking about? Mm. You cannot flex the rules and the conduct when it suits you because people will take advantage of that in future and it will cause chaos.
Yeah, a united front at some stage is very important.
It's very important, yes.
Mm. Let's wrap it up with an event we were both invited to earlier this week. Unfortunately, I was unavailable, but you went.
Yeah, I did.
So what event was this? What was happening?
Well, it is the Russian embassy.
Okay.
Being the forthcoming chair of BRICS.
Oh, yeah, October.
Yes, in October, they're taking taking the chairmanship from South Africa.
Okay.
And we were both invited with other media personnel. It was a media event.
Ah, yes.
Where we know that Russia is under sanctions and also it doesn't have the voice globally to can communicate its as a country practices, its cultural programs or international people think Russia exists to can fight with Ukraine, but that's not the issue. Russia is a founder member of BRICS, is the incoming chair of BRICS, and there's a lot of things that are happening between the Russian Federation and a lot of African states. There's a lot of projects and programs that are happening, and so this was a media event where media personnel were invited and from all sectors. And whether you are a blogger, whether it's podcasts and print media, as well as, you know, social media, actually.
Yes,
the invitation was so broad that it had people from all sectors and spectrums. I met one gentleman there, I just forgot his name. He's an Afrikaner blogger. Now, I never imagined an Afrikaner in South Africa having a blog that is heavily followed, obviously, by Afrikaners and become friends of Russia or want to write. So the whole intention of Russia with this whole thing was that the world is being fed one-sided narrative about Russia and its relation to BRICS member state. And therefore, we must start moving and engaging other people to say, come and hear us. Come and look at our projects, the things that we do in South Africa. One of the things that I've picked up regarding their cultural office in South Africa is the exchange program that they have with South African youth. One of the international programs they have, and it started on the 25th of August, and it's running throughout the whole of September. It's a program of media specialists or journalists or students. There's a competition they are running for people up to the age of 25 who are in the media and journalism process to write articles about Russia. They even say, the directive is very clear. They even say, criticize us, or write, inform us, or write articles. So there's a competition where they will win scholarships and awards. And you know, this has been running for 3 years. And none of our mainstream media, including our SABC, including our own government, which has a bilateral relationship with Russia, and Russia has a cultural office in South Africa. None of South Africa never participated in this event. event. It's the third year. And a lot of countries are participating in it. So we have journalism students, we have media students, or young people who are no longer even students, who have just become a graduate or journalist, and they can participate in this competition. So I'm going to urge people to actually go to the Russian embassy website or cultural website. That was one element about the media. And, you know, they showcase a video fresh off the things that Russia has done for the world, the opportunities that are sitting there, but because of the trade economic embargo that Russia has, to say to other countries and BRICS member states and friends of Russia, we have this, we can partner with your country.
Yes.
Let us do this. One of the things that we spoke about, you know, last year sometimes, was Russia extending its arm to South Africa and say, we've got oil. We can come and open a refinery in South Africa, and you can get oil cheaper, and you produce your own, you know, fuel. And I asked before, why is South Africa not taking that advantage? Because we've got a bilateral relation with Russia. If we can go into military drills, or practices with Russia, why wouldn't we take advantage of them establishing an oil refinery in South Africa at their own cost and helping us to can have fuel cheaper than what we are having? That's one element. But another important thing that I need to really mention regarding the Russian partner as BRICS, South Africa is a very important BRICS partner, and we are a country with debts.
Sure.
We still go and borrow money from the IMF and the World Bank. When there's a BRICS bank with zero interest or very little interest that we can trade with, it's our trading partner. Not to say the US and the UK are not our leading trading partners, but IMF and the World Bank are not US and UK in inverted commas. They are not. Why wouldn't we borrow money from the BRICS bank, loans with zero interest? Right now, from the 1st of September, BRICS as a leading, I mean Russia, as a leading a member of BRICS and the incoming chairperson in October, they are launching their own SWIFT.
Wow.
So now if you want to trade...
To trade directly.
With any member that would have, or any country that would have subscribed to that SWIFT, it doesn't have to be a BRICS member state.
Okay.
Guess what? Over 140 countries, some of them have no interest in BRICS, some are not members of, they haven't applied to be members of BRICS, they've signed up to say we are ready. Because if you take a country like Iran, that has good relationships with South Africa as well as with Russia, and they've now become a BRICS Plus member, and they want to trade with Brazil or with Russia or with China, why would Iran have to trade in a dollar?
Exactly.
And not with their own currencies. Or what did you call it? The bartering exchange of commodities.
Because that's my biggest thing, that as BRICS, why are we not operating at that level? Where we say, okay, you've got oil, we've got diamonds, we've got vegetables, we've got this, we've got whatever commodities.
Yes.
Why are we not bartering? Where we can barter.
And you are correct. That's one of the things that Russia is bringing to the awareness. Remember Colonel Gaddafi tried to do that with Africa, to use our gold, diamonds, and God give it.
Whatever your strength is, should be what you're trading in.
Should be what you trade in. Let me give an example. Right now, the South African citrus farmers, they are owed over 100 million US dollars by Russia, because before the embargo, they were sending citrus, you know, products to Russia. Our own agricultural products, they are not being paid. Russia can't pay them. You know why? Because it was dollar-based, because it's under SWIFT. If we move to this new trade commodity, or they call it international money payment system, something like that. If we move to that, we don't have to abandon SWIFT. We can move into that and say, when we trade with our West, when we trade with the UK and the US and others who are not members of the new trade system, we will pay with this one. Then our citrus farmers that Russia owes money, they can be paid. That's the thinking that we are supposed to bring into the picture. But let me tell you why our government is dragging feet. And I don't know if you are aware that South Africa has dropped the ball in activity. There's no more noise about BRICS, BRICS, BRICS. Although our Sherpa is still active there, we had The owner of IOL, Mr. Iqbal Seif, has been the chairperson of the BRICS Business Council, you understand, at the moment. So we have been active, but just put behind. One, because the chairperson was Iqbal Seif, and we know what white capital and white business is view on with Iqbal Seif. That's one part. The second part is fresh. Who owns the banks in South Africa? The first mistake or the first problem is we don't have or we don't own the central bank. The South African Reserve Bank is not owned by the government. The government deploys the governor and the administrators there, but it's a private entity. It has shareholders, even if the government is a minor shareholder there. That's one element. So it is going to be very difficult for us to can make decisions that will be of national interest in global trade because of that problem. The second part is commercial banks are being used as the bankers for the government, first of all, as lenders to government and to individuals, you understand? And it's commercial banks. The South African government banks with the five commercial banks, not even with minor ones, you know, the FNBs and the APSAs, the government banks with them because the government does not have a state-owned bank. Now, imagine if these banks that are London and New York, you know, captured, if they now have to move away from SWIFT or start dealing or having an alternative which is being presented by Russia as the leading member of BRICS countries. Russia and China have finished that part. They've agreed, they are trading in their own commodities, in their own monies directly. So what Russia is saying to the world is, we have this opportunity.
We've started a party, join us.
Come and join us. You know, and countries like Iran, countries like Maduro sitting there in Venezuela, and many others have joined. And I think South Africa should not be left behind in this trade and financial transaction. You know, financial transactions are very important to pay your debts, to grow your economy, to develop people. Now, today, if I get an opportunity that my child must go and study in Russia and I want to send money, I must send it through the dollar, via the dollar or via another country for it to reach the child because Russia is under the trade embargo. We are not under trade embargo between us and Russia. So we should not be shy as a nation to can improve our regime. We are better off, fresh. I can tell you, any economist will tell you that we are better off to benefit if we do trade with Russia or with BRICS member states than with the old, you know, Commonwealth member states. Because we are sitting there as members of the Commonwealth, which is what, historical? Colonialism?
Yes.
English-speaking countries?
Absolutely.
And that's the reason we are being held back. And I think we should move, you know. And in us bringing young ministers, we should also bring young and fresh ideas to say the world is moving to the East.
There must be different ways of doing things because we've been doing things the same old way. And more often than not, we get the short end of the stick.
Yes, look at what the U.S. U.S. is not even producing much oil than African states, Nigeria, than Venezuela, than Iran, or any other country. And the oil, it's based on the U.S. dollar, who are not the largest and the best oil supplier of the world. Why the dollar? Why would Nigeria not sell crude oil to South Africa in exchange for gold for their oil? You understand? Or any other? I mean, for me, it's if we are not going to wake up and bite the bullet as a nation, as Africa, we are the biggest and the most advanced economy in the continent, and if we don't take advantage of that and trade with countries that will benefit us. Years back when we grew up, we were told Chinese products are what? What is the word that was used?
In Hong Kong.
Hong Kongs. We were told they are bad. They are Chinese. We were never told that the sneakers we used to wear were actually made in China and labeled with German, American brands and the British brand. You understand? But now China produces everything. If you look at India, it's the world leading country, another member state. So we're leading country on IT equipment, the computers, and all that. Look at the number of IT specialists that India is producing and feeding the world.
Sure.
And why don't we align ourselves with those people? Understand? We are chasing finished product. We don't want to have
Being part of the process.
Being part of the process. Yeah. It will benefit us as a nation.
Absolutely.
But I think the things will move a little bit faster. I think we had problems internally as a country, politically, but we dropped the ball. BRICS, we went a little bit slow and silent. in our chairmanship era. Yes, sir. That's my observation.
Now, looking at the GNU or the coalition government currently, and that already it's teka-teking, there's a bit of volatility between the ANC and the DA.
Yes.
We also know the DA's position when it comes to Russia and Ukraine.
Yes.
Russia about to be the new chair of BRICS. How will those dynamics play out, do you think?
Well, Fresh, again, you know, you'd like to put me as if I'm a sangoma. It's going to be a tough one. I can't be a sangoma of politics. Look.
But do you think the DA are going to stand up and protest? And if they do protest, what would they have South Africa do?
Look, remember, I think one of the deputy ministers of DERCO, if I'm not wrong, I can't remember well, maybe from the DA. But the DA must understand that being in government, you are part of government. You and there's government policy positions.
Yes.
I think they will still go ahead and make noise about their position regarding BRICS, regarding Russia, regarding a relation with what they see with a Zionist eye, being friends of Israel. We know the DA position on Israel. And the government position on Palestine, you understand?
Yes.
I mean, we have been in the ICJ and the ICC. I think they will still continue to make noise, but they don't have a choice at the moment because there is a policy position of a country. There's a foreign policy of the Republic of South Africa.
Yes.
South Africa is one of the founder members of BRICS, and I don't think South Africa should even blink in thinking of dropping the ball. Actually, I think South Africa must tell the DA, which is part of South Africa, to say, we would rather divorce the IMF, the World Bank, the Commonwealth and the European trading. We are not saying we are not trading with them,
sure,
but we are saying we are putting our concerted effort towards the East.
Absolutely.
But I think they're going to be very critical. I just don't know. I just forgot who are the deputy ministers of DERCO.
I think it's Alvin Bottes at DERCO.
Is it one deputy?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think it's Alvin Bottes.
Because normally it's two. And Alvin Bottes is from which political
ANC?
It's from the ANC. Oh, okay. But normally, at DERCO, you have two deputy ministers, if you recall.
Yes.
And I don't know why my memory was saying it is one of those where the DA got one. But if that's the case, if it's the Minister Lamola, look, every Minister Lamola there is going to defy the DA. They can scream and tumble and say whatever they want to say. He has shown them when he was the Minister of Justice with the, you know, the last few months of his term at the Justice and Constitutional Development and Correctional Services Minister to say our position on Palestine and Israel is very clear.
Yes.
And I don't think the DA will also want to drag the country backwards. Remember, they also must be politically smart. They can't be seen as going to bed with the ANC, and then when they are in bed and it's not warm enough in the bed, they want to start screaming and saying the ANC are very bad people in bed. When they went there knowing what is the ANC standing for politically, they can't be seen as, they will be very clumsy on them. I think they've played their political cards very wisely by forming coalition with the ANC. Otherwise, they would have been left in the cold.
Absolutely.
But I think the DA played it very wisely. And they can't risk this now. The biggest loser, if the GNU collapses, the biggest loser is going to be the DA. Everybody else will benefit because the ANC will just need either Umkhonto weSizwe or the EFF, one of the two, to can replace the DA. They already have the little smaller Yana ones like IFP, PAC, and Protectic Alliance. They have them already. But if that marriage collapses, the loser of that marital union is going to be the Democratic Alliance. The ANC will not lose and stay out of power. They will not. They will not. They will not say DA go and govern with those leftists. No. The ANC will say, I'm staying. I'm the leading party in the country with 40%.
We'll find someone else willing to play.
We'll find somebody else. You know, when you divorce, you can just marry another person.
Yeah.
Even if it's a younger person with a younger person. The ANC just need the EFF 10.9%, 9.something%. Then they will remain. Actually, should they do that, I think people will hug the ball. We'll say, but I've said it before, never. The ANC will never divorce the DA. It may happen out of anger and frustration, like it happened in Gauteng. The Banyaza there was a bold move for Gauteng province. And I don't want to articulate it to Banyaza Lusufi alone. I want to say the ANC in Gauteng put their foot down to say the Democratic Alliance is not going to bully us. We have our own constituency that we represent. And look, in Gauteng, there were even less than 40 in Gauteng, I think so. They're about 35% plus minus. But they took a bold stand. So I think for progress' sake, for international relations picture, the DA must behave.
They must toe the line.
Yeah, they must toe the line. We've got a national position as a country.
Sure.
And we cannot draw back. You know, it's the same as in the yesteryear when the DA wanted South Africa to impose sanctions on President Mugabe. How? How on earth do you do that? And President Mugabe, as way back, the late, may his soul rest in peace, as way back, fresh, before BRICS, before BRICS was formed, I've told you it was how BRICS was formed. It was during the time China and Russia were having this bilateral. There was IPSA, India, Brazil, South Africa. They were having the South-South cooperation, the South countries, South America, South Africa, of Africa and South of Asia. So the IPSA and these two, and then it formed BRICS. Long before that era, and I remember IPSA was formed around 2003, it started that time. Before then, President Mugabe has said to the world, I do not know why people are concerned about the West where the sun sets. We must focus on the East where the sun rises and the future is there. The man had wisdom, he had vision. And today, what is happening in the world, the East, the Asian tigers have come up to show the world we did it without the West. We did it with embargoes. We did it after Japan was destroyed during the Hiroshima. And we can do it with our African, you know, fellow counterparts and the Arab in the Middle East. And I think South Africa must stay on that line. Then we will be a good country. I want to see myself at an old age as a retired diplomat and say to people, you know, guys, when IPSA was formed, I was sitting in Brazil. I was there. I was in the meetings that wrote those notes. And we used to motivate to President Mbeki why IPSA is important. When BRICS was started, I was at home by doing international relations for the Department of Transport through an agency of transport. And I was saying this Africa Trade Corporation, you know, cross-border movements as well as movements of goods and people in the continent and towards our trading partners. It's very important for the future of this country. And that's what I want to say. I've got nothing to benefit from that. But the whole country will benefit if we stay focused and we draw the line that our forebears have laid the foundation for. You know, it's us drawing the line.
Yes, sir. Now, before we wrap up, the other deputy minister you're looking for is Miss Anna Tandi Moraka.
And she's from which?
Also from the ANC.
From the ANC. Ah, no, then it's safe. Oh, no.
They kept Deko in the lager.
Ramza is clever. Yes. Oh, yeah. I knew there were two deputies. I actually never.
No, because also you can't risk. I mean, the DA ran that tongue.
No, but
you can't risk.
Actually, looking at it, they were smart. Look, I must clap hands for President Ramaphosa. Now, looking at it, it's not only that. Look at housing. Yeah. They're both ANC. There's a big infrastructure department. Look at what he did at Public Works. DA wanted it to make noise. He moved the former minister to say, stay there. And then you look at correctional services, justice. You know that it's ANC dealers. Advocate. I think it's an advocate, if I'm not wrong, Nell, the deputy minister of the troubled Simelane. He's also from the ANC. Adrian Nell is from the ANC. So I checked it because I wanted to call him this week for my own problems. But I think the establishment of the executive authority was, in these circumstances, it was handled very well.
Yes, sir.
The PAC is making noise about land, give this man the land part. But no. Then if that is the case, if the entire DERCO is literally house, then DA will make noise outside. And they will be alone. They'll be there with, look, Freedom Front Plus doesn't involve itself a lot on international issues. They focus mainly domestically.
Sure.
on you know, taking care of their constituency. They operate more like a local party. And I think to some lesser extent, the Democratic Alliance in international era and the political battle or the diplomatic battle against Russia, I think they will have the Patriotic Alliance to some extent, not against Russia, but on international arena. The Patriotic Alliance is pro-Israel, we know that. And also the, what is called this other party, Reverend Meshwe,
ACDP.
ACDP as well. The ACDP position on relations with Russia and Palestine is the same position as the Democratic Alliance. But those are non-entities. They won't make a huge difference.
Absolutely.
And I think Minister Lamola, Minister Ambassador Lamola, because we can call him that now, he will handle this matter. Look, how many years to go? We still have, you know, a full 4 years to go on this. But let us pray that this thing works for the benefit of the country. For me, our relations with Russia are very important.
Yes,
our relations with BRICS are even more important than our relations with Russia.
Mm.
They are much more for the economic benefit of this country. We have debt now.
Mm.
Fresh President Ramaphosa during COVID borrowed and blew $500 billion. Of the money we borrowed, this loans that comes with conditions, you understand? And that's the problem. We have the BRICS bank, we have BRICS member states, we have China that say, borrow money from me. I won't charge you interest. Let's work together. Although, you know, people are saying the Chinese, they've got their own agenda in Africa because they will go and borrow you money and build an airport. And if you don't pay back the loan, they will take the whole airport and the sea and what and what. But it will take a very naive head of state to can enter into such agreements, to can barter with state commodities and state assets.
Some things you don't put on the line.
Yeah, some things
what.
You don't risk. I mean, I wouldn't, as a nation, take chances with our ports of entry. Those
yes.
are our source of income and trade.
Yes.
And in conclusion to that matter, did you see now the president has also announced that the entities have gone back to the departments. It was announced this past week as
yes.
well. Yes. Because Minister Pravin Gordhan has died with his baby. That small, what not small, the minister of, or the ministry of state entities. Now President Ramaphosa has allocated, I know in transport being my department,
yes, sir.
Transnet and others have come back to transport, and Eskom has gone to Minister Ramaphosa, and others have decided to take on their own ministries. Look, do you want my comment on that? I've been in government for a long administration. Look, our departments are failing. Our government departments are not equipped with people.
Yes, sir.
That and I don't say there are no qualified people in South Africa, but I've seen that the people are not equipped with people who are having a business acumen. You see, we studied public admin and we know public administration, we know government, and these entities are being operated as business entities. Some have the boards, some have CEOs, and they're operating as business entities. I am just worried that will continue. We know that them collapsing and them failing, it was not because they did not have the right people in the right positions. It was corruption and maladministration. That's what caused some of these entities to fail.
As it was said, it was intentional hollowing out.
Exactly. So I am worried that them being going to the mother, it's a good thing. I must say that first. It is good that South African Airways, Transnet, and others are with the Department of Transport. And I'm using transport as an example. But whether the department at headquarters, do they have capable and competent people to can absorb this extra responsibility that they've come and turn around these entities? But remember, the government has a plan to say the ministry or the Ministry of Performance Evaluation will aid the president to can oversee this transition and this process and the reporting.
Sure.
Let's hope. And look, they've got good people there. I don't undermine and underestimate the capabilities of Minister Ntshavheleng, for example. And I think the government is technocrats, man. You know, if this MKANC thing can die, and we have those experts and technocrats sitting in those MK seats as backbenchers in parliament, they can contribute a lot
yes.
towards stabilizing the government. If we were thinking of using those people to stabilize and to also strengthen the performance of government, even if it's at municipal level.
We need to play to every single person's strengths.
Exactly.
For purposes of advancing the country, not personal gains.
Not personal gains. Yeah, and not even
then this country politics. Will move.
We will move fresh. Not even in party politics. Gain. You know, right now, I'm thinking, am I going back to work? Do I really want to go back there? Mm. Legally and you know, financially, I want to because I'll have an income and a stable job. Mm. But I was thinking, 26 years of my life, 13 years in the cross-border road and border management field, 13 years in the diplomatic field, 26 years in international arena, if you look at it. And I'm thinking, do I really, let me pack my bags and leave and go and do media. Because yes. I fell in love with this, you know, associating with you is very bad because the state may lose me to this whole thing. I'm thinking of going to the BRICS summit, not as a trade or a diplomat person or for government.
But as a media person.
As a media person, understand? And what a loss. Well, I'm saying I sit here and I talk on what BRICS should be doing, what is the history, and what should happen. Somebody will sit there, but why don't you go and share that at the BRICS seminars of government? I'm like, oh, it doesn't, what am I benefiting from that? I'm benefiting. I was in. They didn't appreciate me. I'll do it from outside.
Yeah.
You see, and these are some of the things that the guy, and I don't want to talk about Botswana. I want to talk about the skills and the people we trained, we funded their studies. They are sitting out there being frustrated because of internal political fighting of comrades and all that. It is crippling the country. It is doing the country injustice.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, if we are going to allow people to think with their hearts, not their minds, then we'll sit where we are sitting as a nation. I mean, I sit and I look at the problems of Home Affairs. I sit and I look at the questions that the Minister of Home Affairs is asking. You know, let me give you one example. What happened in the past week when you were having fun somewhere in Europe? I don't know when are you going to go and DJ in China or for the BRICS summit.
I was in China over Easter. You stayed.
Yeah, I remember that. But let me tell you, did you see the story of a South African consul general in United Arab Emirates?
Oh, who was selling visas?
Who was selling visa material?
Allegedly,
yes. And he took his son there and all that. You know, when that case ended, I said, if they give me that case, I'll break it. If it has happened, if it has happened, I'll break that case up in 5 minutes. There won't be long back and forth. And somebody was saying to me, South Africa should have withdrawn his diplomatic immunity so that the Arabs can. I said, no, he didn't do anything wrong to the Arabs. He stole in South Africa because the South African mission abroad, the South African embassy or consulate.
It's South Africa.
It's South Africa. And what is that? That's treason.
Yeah.
Now, you are the head of mission. You are deployed and representing the president. And we are talking allegations here fresh. We don't say the consul general has done that. And then you have alleged to have connived with criminals to break into your own mission.
Yes.
And stole things that you issued visas to. And this happens after the Libyan visa saga. You understand? That's treasonous. You stole from union building in true sense.
Yeah.
You stole what we call face value commodities.
Yes, sir.
You issued visas illegally to people that we don't know what they're doing with those visas in South Africa, whether it's drug trafficking, whether it's human trafficking, whether it's arms trafficking, whatever. You understand? That is treasonous. That person should, if found guilty, or if should be charged with treason. But there's a lot of questions that goes with that case. I actually vividly recalled how when he was announced to be going to United Arab Emirates, I was like, I've never heard of this person. But what caught my attention is that I was listening on the day he was being interviewed in one of the radio stations. It just happened coincidentally. He took his son to the interview. That time is 2-3 years back. And as I was listening, I'm like, why would I bring my son to a radio interview? But if it was a child who's underage, you want to expose them to radio or to diplomats. The son was over 40. So how would you take a more than 40-year-old person to a radio interview? Then it is alleged that the son was also involved in crime in a mission in the UAE, United Arab Emirates. And I asked myself the first question also that can assist them with investigation, because the allegation is the ambassador, the consul general asked the Arabs to issue a diplomatic visa to the son. It's not possible.
Sure.
Because the son at age 40-something is not supposed to be carrying a diplomatic passport.
He's not a dependent.
He's not a dependent.
Yeah.
You understand? So he's not having a diplomatic passport. So these are some of the basic questions I will ask. What passport did the Arabs issue a diplomatic visa on? They can't issue it on a normal passport.
Yes.
He can't have a diplomatic passport. If he had a diplomatic passport, then Dirico and Home Affairs are equally guilty of the passport because he was not supposed to have a diplomatic passport because he's not a dependent of the diplomat. But there's quite a number of things. And somebody said, yeah, but he's the head of mission. Why did he have to break through the roof? Or his criminals said one is a criminal activity. They had to stage a crime. But secondly, something that you don't know, and if I'm not disclosing state, I must put a disclaimer, state secrets. The head of missions, they don't have what we call cryptographic security clearance. At the embassy, the ambassador is the boss.
Oh, yes.
And the head of corporate services, Botsang or Pinky, is the admin. The head of mission does not have access to what we call the comm center. The communication. They don't have clearance to can enter there.
Yeah.
They don't have combination codes to can open that and access passports and visas. And cryptographic communication between us and headquarters, they don't have that training. They don't have that information. So they can't enter that place except when they open the ceiling and enter the place if it has happened. But these are some of the challenges that the people who are new in government, who are occupying these positions, like Ronald Lamola, the minister, they will need experienced people who also are not politically contaminated, who also do not have fear to can say to a minister, "Minister, this cannot be done, or you cannot take your niece and come and employ your niece at the embassy." And if we don't have administrators, because you are doing that to protect the country. You are not doing that to deny anybody any opportunity.
Exactly.
You are doing that to protect the country. The head of corporate services or the head of intelligence at our mission in the United Arab Emirates, when they saw the ambassador's child living there and having diplomatic privileges, they should have brought it to the attention of headquarters. So something abnormal is happening here. So there's a lot of these things that, you know, we should be wary of. But French, this is embarrassing, man. I don't know who's not corrupt anymore in this country. Honestly, serious note, I don't know who is. You know, I had a friend, a colleague from Zimbabwe. This colleague from Zim used to say, he used to say to us in the office, you know, in Zimbabwe, everybody's a spy. Out of every 12 people, only one, they will tell them that you are all spies. Then you look at each other to check who is not a spy.
Yes.
Understand? You don't even trust each other. You are a spy without knowing you are a spy.
Yes.
And that's the challenge we are faced with in this country, to say we are not doing things for the best interest of our country.
Yes.
As a nation and as people. Look, I'm sitting here.
You often fail to feel a sense of this is for king and country.
Exactly.
It's more how can I benefit and how can my immediate circle also benefit?
Also benefit, yes.
And I'm not saying you shouldn't benefit. But,
no, people should
but you benefiting should be a byproduct of you delivering.
Of having have delivered.
Deliver and rather, and you know, people eat. People eat in every country. Even in the mighty USA, people eat. But deliver first.
Earlier on, somebody was saying people will steal 200 million to deliver a project and they will eat 190 million.
Yeah.
And not even leave the one to do the bare minimum.
Yeah.
But our ethics, and for me it's ethical. You must have ethics to be in the public. Whether you are a political
hunger doesn't know ethics.
No, whether you are a political office bearer or a public official, ethics are very important. No, but with ethics you will eat fresh even if you have, because you are paid a salary for doing your job. So you are not starving, you are not unemployed.
Yeah, but you are greedy.
Yeah, that's greed. That's a lack of ethics.
I get your small house is a slave queen and she wants good hair and a holiday.
Well, some people have wives, why do you have small? And there's another problem. People have slave queens and me and you, we have zero. My brother,
I think on the note, you missed me so much, you're not stopping to talk. I'm going to stop you.
Was it not?
My man, we're almost at 2 hours.
No.
I promise.
We're paying for last week.
Yeah.
But now, I don't answer your followers. It's your followers now of this show. I don't answer them anymore because people are angry, man. They get angry to us that we are sick, we are not here, we have other things to do. They get angry.
But we're back.
No, we are.
We are back.
And if things goes well, fresh, you know, I've communicated part of that. If things goes well, and we get proper funding, we may actually have 2 segments per week.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, if we can afford Pezulu Wax first, then we will move.
Done deal. Brother man, where do we find you on social media?
Yeah, at Botsang M on social media handles, botsangm@gmail.com and 082-485-9100 on WhatsApp. And that's where, of course, I can be found on that.
Brother man, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Fresh.
As always, it's an honor, it's a privilege. And let's do this politics thing again next week.
Thank you, my brother.
And we are done with another edition of Hashtag Politrics with Botsang Modimwane Moilwa. Coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. If you'd like to get in touch, you can email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography, to Otis the Flow Fraser for making sure that all of our imaging sounds proper, sounds world class. Shout out to show producer Tabiso Sikwane and executive producer Keletso Mutisakeng. Till next week, have a wild week in spite of yourselves.